Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. Hope you had a great weekend. More Monday morning politics now, including which two local Democrats voted with House Republicans on Friday on a bill to remove Obamacare's insurance policy standards. Molly Ball, national politics correspondent for The Atlantic, is our guest. Hi, Molly. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. Great to be here.
And as you know, and as many of the listeners probably also know, after our show on Friday, the House of Representatives voted on a bill that would remove Obamacare's insurance policy standards. That is, for at least the next year, not only could Americans who had substandard plans keep them, as the president had promised, but insurance companies could begin selling them again to new customers. That would be plans, when they say substandard, it means that might not accept you with pre-existing conditions, might not cover preventive care, prescription drugs, lab tests, might have a steeper price curve based on age than Obamacare allows, might have caps on your coverage if you have a really expensive illness. Obamacare standards outlawed all those limitations, except for those people who already had such plans grandfathered in that the president told people they could keep if they want to. So, Molly, why does the House bill go that far to eliminate standards for future policies, not just the people who want to keep what they got, which is what all the controversy had been about?
Well, Democrats, including the White House and Leader Nancy Pelosi in the House, claim that this is not an attempt to fix Obamacare. It is sort of a backdoor attempt to repeal it, as the House Republicans have done so many times, because this, by eliminating those standards, not just for old plans, but for new plans, it would create this actuarial death spiral by bringing people out of the exchange where they have to purchase higher quality coverage and putting them on these new plans. In a way, the Republicans don't disagree. In a way, Republicans say, yes, we don't want people going to the exchanges. We want to ensure that this private marketplace that exists outside the exchanges remains sustainable and vibrant, because they don't like the exchanges. They don't like government being involved in the healthcare business. That's the nub of this whole dispute over Obamacare. At the same time, you know, you did see a lot of Democrats, including those two you mentioned from New York State, voting.
I haven't mentioned them yet, but I'll get to that in a minute. But go ahead.
But you saw a lot of Democrats, particularly moderate Democrats or Democrats in vulnerable seats, 39 of them voting for this bill in the House, I think primarily for political reasons, because it has always been smart politics to say, I don't want to repeal Obamacare, I want to fix it. Now, Republicans have not been practicing that kind of politics so far all along. They have insisted that repeal is the only answer. So it is sort of interesting to see them come this far, at least rhetorically, to offer a fix to the bill and sort of stand up for the people that they're calling the victims of Obamacare, say, the president broke his promise that you could keep your plan, so we are going to ride to the rescue, we're going to help you. The question is, on a policy level, could this actually be implemented without bringing down the whole edifice? And that's what Democrats say would happen if this actually were passed, which it's not going to.
Except for 39 Democrats in the House who voted with the Republicans on that bill, and two of them are from the New York City metro area. They are Tim Bishop of Long Island and Sean Patrick Maloney of the Hudson Valley. And, Molly, they are both in swing districts. So was that the pattern for who voted with the Republicans?
Mostly. Now, Democrats expected to lose a lot more. Pelosi expected to lose a lot more to the votes on this bill. They were expecting originally as many as 100 Democrats to defect. In a way, it doesn't matter because, again, this bill is not going to be brought up in the Senate, and if it did get to the White House, it would be vetoed. But that obviously would have been a major symbolic blow. And so what you saw late last week was the White House scrambling and holding a lot of briefings and really putting pressure on House Democrats not to defect on this bill, because and also the president, you know, proposing his own administrative fix to the bill that is, again, aimed at this issue of allowing people to keep their plans rather than having them canceled. Now, of course, none of this might actually work, right? You have a lot of state insurance commissioners saying they are not going to implement what the White House this quote-unquote fix that the White House is proposing, all of this chaos goes back to that non-working website. The original plan was that people whose plans were being canceled would be able to go get better and potentially even cheaper coverage by going to the website. But with the website not working, they can't do that. So it all comes back to that.
To that, and separately, the president's finger-wagging promise that you could keep your health insurance if you like it, period, which turned out not to be true for a lot of people. So listeners, anything you want to say about this, but if you live in Tim Bishop's district on Long Island, if you live in Sean Patrick Maloney's district in the Hudson Valley, would, if you're a Democrat who supports Obamacare, would you like to see them primaried now, or how much would you hold this vote against them? 212-433-WNYC, or anything else you want to say, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show as we talk to Molly Ball, national politics correspondent for The Atlantic. And Molly, to that point, when Republicans vote with Democrats at all, never mind on defining legislation, they tend to get primaried from the right. Are we entering an era now where we may see primaries next year from the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, to quote Howard Dean, against a Tim Bishop on Long Island, a Sean Patrick Maloney in the Hudson Valley, and elsewhere among these 39, against these 39 Democrats?
In a word, no. We're not seeing that at least yet. I think if there is a rising progressive wing in the Democratic Party, it has not gained steam to the level where it is threatening primary challenges. And I think there's two reasons for this. First, there's a structural difference between the two parties. The Republican Party is a majority conservative and a minority moderate. The Democratic Party is a majority moderate and a minority liberal, just because there are so many more conservatives than liberals in the American population as a whole. So that means that it's harder for Democratic primary challenges who are primarily ideologically from the left, even in safe Democratic seats, it's hard for them to get traction. Second, we just haven't seen the rise of a movement that is devoted to this kind of inter-party fighting that the Tea Party has devoted itself to within the Republican Party. You mentioned the Working Families Party. They are expanding to more states, and they do see themselves as sort of a Tea Party of the left. They do want to push Democrats to be more progressive, but they are not large enough at this point, and they are not aggressive enough at this point to really pose a threat to a lot of moderate Democrats.
There were, by the way, two other New York State Democrats who voted with the GOP on the bill. From further upstate, Dan Maffei from Syracuse and Bill Owens from the Adirondacks, also Congresswoman Elizabeth Etze from the New Britain area, Estee, she doesn't sell handmade goods, Elizabeth Estee from the New Britain area of Connecticut, the only Connecticut Democrat to defect. None of the New Jersey Democrats defected, if you were wondering, but with 39 in all, I figured you'd like to know, folks, the ones not just from our immediate New York metro area, but from the whole tri-state, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. So there's the list, and let's take a phone call. Billy in Jamaica, Queens, you're on WNYC. Hello, Billy.
Hi, good morning.
Go ahead.
I was thinking that if the House plan would be adopted, then I think a major part of this is really people with pre-existing conditions. Those people would be able to keep the ACA plan, or, you know, to take an ACA plan, which maybe certain things need to be worked out, but the point is that they could potentially take one of those plans for 1 year, and the people who are not interested in taking one of those plans because they're too expensive and have things that they don't feel that they need would be able to keep their old plans or be on such plans which are, you know, maybe cheaper because they don't have everything that they don't need on them. At the end of 1 year, those who had the 12 months of ACA coverage who had the pre-existing conditions would have credible coverage for a year that would not be able to be restricted against. Those who had the other plans would be able to have those. The pool that obviously would then possibly have caused the premiums to then go up on the pre-existing people pool, I think would end up just being redone because people would probably, you know, join different plans and be able to get the plans that they feel suit them, but they would no longer be able to have that pre-existing condition held against them. I think in a very significant sense, once you can just get a lot of people who have pre-existing conditions and who do not have coverage to be able to be covered and, you know, to have some kind of coverage for a certain amount of time, then I think you really take care of the bulk of the problem, because the idea that, oh, so many people who have pre-existing conditions have never had coverage is not true. In many cases, they lost it at some point, and then once
they changed jobs or whatever, and then they couldn't get back in if they stopped being covered by an employer or some other group, because we are talking about people on the individual market. Billy, I appreciate your call and the complexity of your analysis. And Molly Ball, I think it actually raises a few important questions. And one is that politically, the Republicans, I don't think, are really ready to go back on Obama's promise to cover everybody who has pre-existing conditions, probably not even go back on covering them in the same pool, though correct me if I'm wrong, because it's just too popular a thing. Like some of the other provisions of Obamacare, like keeping your adult children on your policy if you're the adult parent until, the kids are 26 and things like that. So there are things that the Republicans really don't actually want to touch because they would suffer the political blowback. Do you agree?
I think you're probably right about that, but it's hard to say definitively whether that's the case when Republicans have not really proposed a systematic plan. They keep saying they're for repeal and replace, but there hasn't been a comprehensive plan offered by the Republicans for health care reform. Once you repeal all of Obamacare, including those popular positions,
right.
and you're right that individual parts of Obamacare, except for the individual mandate, are popular by themselves. But the Republicans have not, as a group or as a conference, come forward and said, we're going to keep these things and here's how we're going to make it work to really implement universal health care. And, of course, the reason the individual mandate is in there is because, according to the insurance industry and most health policy experts, without that, all the popular stuff doesn't work. The caller mentioned very briefly something that's really important, that if you did have only the people with the pre-existing conditions signing up for the healthcare exchanges, it would drive up those premiums. You need the people who are relatively healthy to also be going into the exchanges to smooth out that the premiums for everybody. That's just
right.
How insurance works.
And to be also in the comprehensive plans. That might cost them a little bit more than bare bones plans. That's what the president was trying to explain in his news conference the other day. This goes over the head of most people once you're talking at this level of
right. Wonkiness.
But it really does come down to that if the whole thing is going to wind up affordable, and it is called the Affordable Care Act, on the basis of premiums not being through the roof.
And that's why this deal with the website is so perilous for proponents of Obamacare, why it's not just a technical glitch, because every day that goes by that people can't sign up, it makes it more and more difficult for the administration to hit its numerical targets of getting people on the exchanges. The fewer people, especially healthy people, get on those exchanges, the more those premiums are going to go up, the more the opposition can point to skyrocketing premiums and blame them on Obamacare, the more political pressure there will be to, in some way, get rid of the law.
Let me sneak in a couple of callers real quick from these districts that I mentioned. Linda, in Garrison. Garrison,
yes.
Home of former Governor George Pataki, but also of Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney, or at least that's in his district, right?
That's right. That's right.
And?
And, Garrison is part of Phillipstown, which is, on the whole, a relatively progressive district. I'm pretty sure that Democrats outnumber Republicans in Phillipstown.
That district has gone back and forth, Democrat,
right,
Republican,
exactly.
Democrat, Republican.
Exactly.
There was Sue Kelly, and then there was, I forget the name of the Democrat.
John Hall.
Thank you.
And we worked very hard on behalf of John Hall.
And then there was another Republican.
Nan Hayworth.
Exactly. And now the Democrat, Sean Patrick Maloney. So it's a genuine
right. Swing
district.
Right. Although it did go somewhat more people voted for Obama than for
right. What's
his name?
Maloney?
Romney.
No, for
Romney. Then for Romney. Oh, I see. It was
slightly
Democratic district in the
presidential
election.
So do you think,
and I see that you told our screener you volunteered and donated to the Maloney campaign. Do you think he should be primaried now from the left as a result of this vote?
It's something that I think about. I'm really horrified that he is willing to vote for something that would kneecap the Affordable Care Act. I was so appalled by Nan Haworth that it was a relief to get even, you know, a fairly okay Democrat.
So you're,
but
you're...
he's certainly not speaking for me and for the other progressives.
In this case. Linda, I'm going to leave it there because our time is running short. And let's get one in Tim Bishop's district in Suffolk County. Bonnie, you're on WNYC. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, Brian. I'm such a fan. I am shocked and appalled that Tim Bishop voted with the GOP on this. I mean, I've been a stalwart supporter of his. I feel like I've never had to worry about calling my congressman on stuff because, you know, Tim Bishop has my back as a progressive. And, I mean, we've had some really tough Tea Party opponents, you know, Republican opponents in the election with him. So I guess he's trying to move more to the center, to the right. But, I mean, I can't believe it. I mean, you know, yeah. I am pretty shocked by this.
Bonnie, thank you. So... just give us a quick 30-second answer, Molly, to tie this conversation back to our earlier one in our local politics segment. Is it part of a larger emerging narrative within the Democratic Party? Progressive Bill de Blasio defeating Christine Quinn, centrist in a New York City context. Elizabeth Warren considering a run for president to Hillary Clinton's left in the Democratic primaries, that Noam Scheiber New Republic article getting a lot of buzz on Sunday talk shows this weekend. And you hear some of the early Democratic reaction, learning how their Congress people voted in the case of Bishop and Maloney.
Look, there's no question the left is restless. And I think they've been restless for many years. The list of sort of crimes against progressivism committed by President Obama is very long. But in the past, what's kept them in the tent is President Obama, having that unifying leader. And so with President Obama a lame duck and with the 2016 primaries approaching, I think there's no question that the left is facing a reckoning of sorts as they determine who is going to represent them going forward.
Molly Ball, national politics correspondent for The Atlantic. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC. Still to come on The Brian Lehrer Show today, how the modern fracking industry came to be. A new book looks at the billionaire wildcatters and their industry. Don't be fooled by the breathless media. Aid is getting through to typhoon victims in the Philippines. The Jersey City Council President, who is Filipino-American, will brief us on how best to help, along with another guest. Fire Island as Humpty Dumpty. Sandy literally ripped it in two. Now residents and environmentalists are divided about whether to put Fire Island together again. And with your help, we will crowdsource a New York City borough taxi anecdotal map later this morning. Call in from any neighborhood where the yellow cabs don't go and tell us if the green cabs are showing up. Stick around. Wait for it all. Right now, the latest news with Richard Hake.